From the Cyber Hub bunker and studio, you're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Good morning, security gang. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast. Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. We have a packed show for all of y'all today. In 10 minutes, we're going to get you all the latest headlines that actually matter for cybersecurity practitioners. We're going to go into what does that mean for us as practitioners in order to address these threats or these news, and then how do we operationalize them as part of our larger responsibility of being business enablers and security providers for our organization. So thank you so much for tuning in this morning. Busy. So let's get into that. But before we do, please make sure to check out our Substack, jamesazar.substack.com, for all the latest, and as well as a written summary of the show, including all the links. You can find us on your favorite podcast listening platforms and on your favorite social media platforms. Good morning, and let's get the show going. But before we do that, we have a tradition here. If this is your first time tuning in, we enjoy double espressos. I enjoy coffee a ton. My double espresso coffee cup cheers, a tradition that started 4 years ago, still goes on strong. Let's go ahead, kick this thing off with. So yesterday we talked a little bit about Firebase and some of the issues around Chatter and Firebase and the fact that it was leaking information. Well, now we have more news around Firebase. This time, three cybersecurity researchers discovered close to 19 million plaintext passwords exposed on the public internet by a misconfigured instance of Firebase, which is the Google platform for hosting databases, cloud computing, and app development. The trio scanned more than 5 million domains, found 916 websites from organizations that either had no security rules enabled or had set them up incorrectly. More than 125 million sensitive user records were found, including emails, names, passwords, phone numbers, and billing information with banking details. The researchers started looking at the public web for PII exposed via vulnerable Firebase instances. The three are called LogYKK, XYZ Eva or slash Ava, and then Mr. Bruh. I like the Mr. Bruh one. That's my favorite pseudonym thus far in the show. All the details were organized in a private database, offered an overview of in numbers of the sensitive user information companies exposed due to really improper security settings. Over 84 million names, 106 million email addresses, 33 million phone numbers, 20 million passwords, and 27 million banking records. For passwords, the problem got worse because 98% of them are in plain text. 19 million of these passwords were in plain text. So this kind of goes into the whole process where our developers are processing this data, they're capturing this data, they're storing it in cloud environments that aren't being properly secured. Sometimes these are done as part of a dev process or a QA process in order to authenticate. It could be, you know, that kind of data, but it's sitting out there. And if security doesn't get a handle on it, you have these types of situations arise. And I think that's significant in this situation, extremely significant. And so that's one thing to keep in mind is you got to be able to address Firebase. You've got to be able to address your cloud environments effectively, and you've got to have kind of a set rules of engagement to starting a cloud environment, meaning there should be some sort of document that goes into play, and that document is essentially for the developers. It gives them the rules of engagement to storing data and how it should be set up and how to notify security to audit those instances as well. That's critically important. Communication. Don't punish for doing it. Rather, try to think ahead. Try to reward them for reporting it. And that way, you'll avoid being part of these statistics altogether. That's really, really important. Multiple threat actors are now exploiting the recently disclosed security flaws in JetBrains Team City software. They're deploying ransomware, cryptocurrency miners, Cobalt Strike beacons, and Golang-based RATs called Spark RAT. CVE-2024-27198 enables an adversary to bypass authentication measures and gain admin control over affected servers. The attackers this way are able to install malware that can reach out to its CNC server and perform additional commands like deploying Cobalt Strike, which, by the way, in a lot of cases is whitelisted. That behavior is expected, especially if you have a very active red team. That's one of the most common red team tools used in your environment, and threat actors know that. They get it, and they use it because it masks their activities. So it's really critical to know when the tools are being deployed and how, and that communication between your security operations team and red team is going to be really important, because when the tools are deployed and where they're deployed and how they're deployed matter in terms of identifying malicious activity. Public disclosure of this month has really drummed up a bunch of ransomware families going after this vulnerability. Bien, Lian, and Jasmine ransomware, and they're all dropping either a Monroe cryptocurrency miner and the Spark RAT. And a lot of people rely on TeamCD for their CI/CD processes. You want to make sure you get that updated as soon as humanly possible, so that there's so you're not a victim of this one as well. The White House and the EPA are all coming out warning of striking threats against the water systems in the United States. A letter sent yesterday asked governors to support and ensure that water systems in their states are adequately defended against cyber attacks and that they can recover if they are breached. Drinking water and wastewater systems are a lifeline for communities, according to the EPA Administrator Michael Reagan. So what does this actually mean? Well, we know one thing. The water systems were attacked because of a PLC unit that was in there. That PLC unit was manufactured by an Israeli company, and the attack from the Iranian was primarily trying to disrupt the Israeli company's operations and then send a message to America. Our message is, instead of going to our enemies and saying, go after our water systems, we'll drop a bomb on one of yours, is let's spend more money securing our water systems, which we need to do. I'm not arguing against the idea of securing our water systems. We definitely need to secure our water systems, and we have to invest in doing so. However, the administration's policy towards nation states like Iran and China that target our water systems is, if you target a water system, then we apply tariffs. See, diplomacy has to go in line here, and the threat of severe financial consequences should be levied as well. However, we don't do that. We're just saying, get a free security scan from CISA, get more and make sure that your water systems can do that. But these are the most under-resourced parts of our critical infrastructure. Water facilities are under-resourced. Many of them are run by city and counties who don't have big budgets. And so the expectation here from the White House and EPA on the federal level is, here's a bunch of stuff you can do, but you want to invest and do more. Now, we ought to do more for our critical infrastructure, but we also ought to send a clear message to Iran and to China. You target our water system, you do something to our population, that's an act of war, and we will retaliate. And that typically will put that to bed, but we don't do that. And that's a challenge all of within itself. Cyber attacks has knocked out the city of Pensacola's government phone lines yesterday. Widespread phone outages were reported over the weekend due to the cyber attack. City spokesperson Jason Wheeler told Recorded Future News that officials are experiencing phone issues across city departments. They're causing delays in receiving service through the 311 citizen support system. Emergency phone numbers like 911 were still operational, but the non-emergency lines were not operational at the time. They couldn't even live stream anything as well due to the fact that they were going through a cyber attack on the city. Pensacola, on the border of Florida and Alabama, is about an hour away from Mobile, has 53,000 residents. So they've actually had to deal with a ransomware attack previously back in 2019, where they refused to pay for it and instead spent $300,000 trying to recover from the incident. They're back there now dealing with it again, and hopefully their experience will help them get past it quicker. APIs are essentially the major highway of all internet traffic. In a new report by Impreva, the State of the API Security in 2024 report found that a majority of internet traffic, 71% of it, was API calls. What's more, a typical enterprise site saw an average of 1.5 billion API calls in 2023. The expansive volume of internet traffic that passes through APIs should be concerning, specifically if you don't have good visibility into your APIs. And here's where the data gets a little bit more interesting. Banking and online retailers reported the highest volume of API calls compared to any other industry in 2023. Tell you, in my time in fintech, API is huge, huge part of the business. We invested a lot in defending our APIs. We invested a lot in getting visibility and managing the entire life cycle of an API, because that essentially becomes your responsibility and something that you want to support your developers and engineers with as a security practitioners. Cyber criminals use many ways to attack API endpoints, including one common attack vector is an account takeover. They'll use Ebola attack. There's all kinds of ways that threat actors will go after APIs. Many APIs, by the way, a good chunk of them are mismanaged, meaning they're not set up properly. They don't have the right header information. A lot of times there's no there's rate limits on them that hinder activity. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that can occur there. Imbreva identified three common types of mismanaged API endpoints that create security risks: shadow, depreciated, and unauthenticated APIs. Shadow APIs are undiscovered or undocumented APIs. Those typically make up around 4.7% of every organization's collection of active APIs. Depreciated API are API endpoints that are essentially out of life, but still remain active somewhere in the library there and are still being able to get called if someone gets the link to that API. And so you want to make sure those are taken out of service. And then unauthenticated APIs, not using the proper TLS or HTTPS configuration to expose sensitive data, is also important. You want to discover, identify, protect, have a robust monitoring systems for your API endpoints, and detect and analyze behaviors, all of which is really important, as well as adding your WAF and DDoS prevention, as well as bot protection on your APIs, are all significant. And there's a lot of very mature products now in the marketplace that are worthy of examining to harden your API infrastructure. Researchers from the Helmholtz Center for Information Security in Germany have disclosed the details of a new DDoS attack vector that impacts several widely used UDP-based application protocols and hundreds of thousands of internet-facing systems. The experts demonstrated a loop DDoS attack where an attacker uses IP spoofing to get two servers to communicate with each other indefinitely over a protocol they both use. The newly discovered DDoS loop attack is self-perpetuating and targets application layer messages. It pairs two network services in such a way that they keep responding to one another's messages indefinitely. In doing so, they create a large number of traffic that results in a denial of service for involved systems or networks. It's a cool read. There's specific use cases for it. Nothing that would got me to go, wow, we've got to address this. I got to take it out. Something I'm keeping in the back of my mind. It's something we'll probably look to address with our firewall providers and other individuals within the org. Microsoft let the Russians know that as of March 20th, meaning today, they'll no longer be able to access Microsoft Cloud Services or BI tools. The Russian tech firm Softline, one of the largest distributor of Microsoft products in the country, said last week that local users will lose access to cloud services provided by Microsoft on March 20th. This is a result of the EU sanctions imposed on Russia after the invasion of the Ukraine. But I don't think Microsoft's too sad about this one. Russia has been constantly targeting Microsoft. Obviously, having their technology deployed within Russia gives the Russians a way to access it. And so nonetheless, Microsoft now complying with these sanctions against Russia that have been set by the US and EU. And finally, Eidos shares tanked Tuesday after the company announced that the Airbus decided not to move forward with their discussions related to the acquisition of their cybersecurity business. This is a crushing blow for Eidos, who is in debt and was hoping that this would save them. We'll see how they recover from that as well. But why is Airbus not buying them? There's not a lot around why Airbus dropped out of the bid, but someone might wonder, what did Airbus know that no one else did as part of their due diligence process there? Interesting enough, we're seeing a lot of consolidation, but this is new. That's it for our show this morning. We'll be back tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern, with a whole lot more. Thank you all for tuning in this morning. Please make sure to subscribe, follow us on your favorite podcast listening platform, and share and comment below. Till then, have a great rest of your day, and most importantly, y'all, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.